it has become more obvious and clear that there is a serious degree of extremist beliefs here in America. And while it had been, let's call it loosely organized, an attempt to keep it hidden in the dark, we've seen extremism become much more organized and bold, stepping into the light in recent years. So what's brought about this new boldness among extremists? Well, maybe it's who they see as supporting them. At least that's who they believe is supporting them. According to my next guest, that would be people ranging from the White House to various departments of our government. Joining us to discuss how this is all unfolding is a professor of sociology at Chapman University who studied extremism for more than 25 years. He's also co-author of the books American Swastika, Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate, and Out of Hiding, Extremist White Supremacy and How It Can Be Stopped. Professor Peter Seamy, how are you today, Professor?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you bringing the reality into the light because, and we'll get into this too, we always think of extremists, racist bigots, whatever you want to tag them as being stupid. But when you look at their means and their methods there, they've plotted and planned a very smart way, and we'll get into that. Chapman.edu is the website for Chapman University. Find out their educational opportunities there. But just as a baseline for the person listening, define extremism.
Well, easier said than done.
Yes.
In many respects. It's one of those, a lot of different definitions been kind of argued for years and years about exactly how to define it. I think there's some key elements, though, that we can agree on. One is the use of political violence to achieve your goals. So that kind of separates folks that, you know, are working within the conventional means in terms of trying to achieve their political goals through legal, you know, means versus those who are willing to use violence to achieve their goals. You know, another factor is kind of support for kind of democratic ethos in terms of, you know, following kind of constitutional order versus more authoritarian methods, working outside of a constitutional system or seeing a constitutional system as kind of a constraint on being able to do what you want. So kind of an anti-democratic ethos and the use of violence, I would say, are two key elements, although it is a pretty complex kind of concept to define, and we can certainly get into other elements as well. But I would say those are two key ones.
Now, what's being perpetrated at a greater rate and pace? I've looked at various your writings along with others. If someone doesn't understand the root of what's being shared in these posts, are they going to understand how toxic these posts and these social media communications are that we're referring to?
No, not necessarily. And of course, that's part of the goal with a lot of type, you know, this type of propaganda, is it can speak to different segments of the public in different kinds of ways. It can appeal to folks in the know who really do kind of get the more subtle aspects of it, the more hidden aspects of it. It can still transmit a message, though, in a more overt way and appeal to other folks just on more base aspects in terms of maybe communicating certain kinds of fears that are more widely felt or experienced throughout the public, but then still have these other subtle kind of innuendo type of aspects to the message that are more hidden. And that would be, you know, again, more folks that are more steeped in the kind of extremist ideology.
If I mention QAnon, which is, I've debated this with myself on my social media pages, has QAnon faded away or did they morph into some semblance of MAGA? But that's another talk for another time. But with QAnon gone, for all intents and purposes, at least in the visibility they had, what has risen and how is this, how are these poisons, how are these tropes being shared in what at least superficially appears to be an innocuous way, which is even being denied by the people who are posting it?
Yeah, well, and again, that's also part of the game, is to put the messages out there, but put them out there in a way that basically provides you with plausible deniability so that you can then deny after the fact, well, you know, it was just a joke, you're taking it more serious than it was meant to, or you're reading into it, you're reaching. It's really kind of a gaslighting strategy that you use with propaganda. That's, you know, pretty common in terms of the use of propaganda, is that establishing plausible deniability after the fact, and we see that a lot with the kind of extremism we're discussing. You know, as far as, you know, the QAnon and what's kind of, you know, emerged, I mean, you have just a whole hodgepodge of different elements to kind of far-right extremism today that are circulating in all kinds of different platforms, you know, mainstream social media platforms like Facebook to more fringe platforms like Telegram. But, you know, one of the things that we see now that's certainly pretty striking as compared to, say, you know, 15 years ago, is the way in which it's circulating through government channels. And that certainly has been, you know, I think a real point of distinction that we're seeing government channels operating in ways that bear an eerie resemblance to extremist channels that we've typically associated with more fringe elements of society.
Over the way that Facebook and X, among the two more mainstream social media channels, have cut out their filters and their fact checking, the fringe platforms aren't even needed anymore.
Well, that's true. That is true. X today is hard to distinguish from some of the darkest corners of Telegram that we've typically associated with, you know, open advocacy of violence and circulation of things like how to make bombs and other kinds of terrorist-related manuals of various sorts. So, yeah, X is a haven for some of the worst kind of vitriol and threats against public officials and other, you know, various other public figures. You know, you see it all right there on X circulating to millions and millions of people. So definitely that's been the case there.
Talking with Professor Peter Seamy, who is Professor of Sociology, Chapman University, chapman.edu, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. The way these posts are structured, and again, if you don't understand the root of what's being said, you're going to fall prey to it. Intentionally or unintentionally, is there a danger of drawing people unknowingly into extremist tropes and converting them into believing them?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, we've seen that happen, you know, with the kind of emergence of computer technology. I mean, you know, even going back to the 1980s and certainly the 90s, when you see the, you know, kind of wide scale development of the internet and its availability, we saw this starting in a much, you know, kind of smaller scale way. And certainly it's continued to develop as this kind of technology has become much more widely available. And then once you see the emergence of social media and how prevalent that becomes as a form of communication, you see much greater ease of these kind of extremist tropes to, you know, kind of emerge within the mainstream. And for people, in some cases, unknowingly kind of starting to tap into it. And you know, we can, you know, how unknowing is it? You know, that's a different argument to have, a different discussion to have. But certainly there are a lot of people where the messages are resonating in terms of they're tapping into certain emotions, certain fears and anxieties that they may have. They may not necessarily associate these with neo-Nazism, for example. But in fact, the very messages may be actually stemming from various types of neo-Nazi propaganda or organizations and so forth.
That's certainly it's an aspect being used in ICE recruitment. And another example here, this was earlier this month, the Labor Department posted a video with the caption on it, "One Homeland, One People, One Heritage," which I tend to believe is more than just coincidental that it all but parrots a phrase used by the Nazis during World War II, translating here, one people, one realm, one leader. I mean, for the Labor Department to say as a response, oh, come on, guys and girls, get a grip, that's making light of a toxic situation that they're creating.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and again, they're one of many government agencies that we could say this about. So But again, it's the hallmarks of using that plausible deniability, making slight modifications, but still sending the message and having this kind of it's a certain kind of emotion and a mood that's being communicated here. And, you know, really what it comes down to is right now we have a government administration that's trying to convince the American public that they face a variety of existential threats. Namely, and most kind of specifically, existential threats related to immigration.
Right.
Right. That these people are trying to take your country. They're trying to take your civilization. They're trying to take your culture. And so they're using these kind of themes and memes and so forth that get at this on some level. And they're really, you know, doubling down, tripling down on the importance of homeland. And that you have a homeland that's under threat, and we're going to save the homeland. We're going to save our people. And of course, this is very much what was done in Nazi Germany and been done elsewhere by various authoritarian regimes, is it trying to convince, you know, citizens about an existential threat that they have to overcome, and they have to overcome it with the use of violence, frankly.
Well, Trump had said on the campaign trail, he used the phrase, the immigrants are poisoning the blood of our nation, which all but parrots what Hitler said about the Jews back in leading up to the Holocaust. I mean, they're not even, in yep. many cases, they're not even being clandestine about what they're trying to say. If you have an intermediate idea of history or know how to use AI now, I was going to say Google search, but I'm showing my age when I say that, I guess, now. But the a simple look of a phrase, well, if you hear a politician repeat something over and over and starts to sour in the taste of it, and you do a AI search of it, I think you might tend to be surprised by what you find is the root of what they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget what Trump promised us as it relates to mass deportations. He said it at least once, if not multiple times, and it might get ugly. And it might get bloody, excuse me.
Yeah.
I correct myself there. It might get bloody. And it has gotten bloody. And that was something when he said it, we should have taken it very seriously and expected that at that point. Because he typically will, on some level at least, follow through on some of these kinds of promises of sorts.
Well, for you listening, here's your homework assignment. Do a search for the word remigration. You'll hear it used in the here and now, but find out the history of that word. And the bridge from then to now is going to be one that you hope that we can get rid of, because it's not an idea that we want in what we like to call the land of the free and the home of the brave. And be sure to get Professor Simi's books, too, because with America Swastika Inside the White Power Movement's Hidden Spaces of Hate, you learn about the roots and the foundations. Then when you go to Out of Hiding, Extremist White Supremacy, How It Could Be Stopped, Professor Simi, along with his co-authors, give you ideas and paths to solutions, doable, realistic, and effective solutions, I might add, too. Find out more about Chapman University at chapman.edu. He is Professor of Sociology, Chapman University, Professor Peter Simi. Professor, thank you for shining a light on the darkness that never wants to light but is in dire need of the light, and thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. It was nice talking with you.